Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
retroviruses. These are sort of viruses which have got an extra step in them. They're sort of very ancient viruses. Before there was, it was so obvious how DNA worked. This is so they're viruses from at least as old as eukaryotic cells. These are cells with a nucleus. So let's try and get something rather straight. DNA is ultra compact, ultra stable. What is it? It's stable. It's stable against radiation. It's compact. It's economic. And DNA has basically four bases, which are adenine, guanine. Those two together, this is the five and six rings, or just a six ring. A thymine and cysteine. So those two, so those four, add up to a codon, which is roots of the little three, and that group of three gives you 4 × 4 × 4, 64 possibilities, which give you roughly 20 amino acids. And those amino acids can be stuck together. So those four code for RNA. Now the RNA, when it's produced, can form primitive machines, and those which is called ribonucleic acid, ribosome, and that is something made out of those ribonucleic acid. These little machines can read messenger RNA with transport RNA and actually make peptides. Now the peptides are your basic protein pieces, but the protein pieces by themselves are not very useful. They're very long, and you have to actually sometimes fold four of them together to make a globular macro protein, which will contain say four or more strands of these peptides. So not only do the peptides fold and use in amazing ways, they can actually fold together to get the bases, and those peptides have these 20 outside things which give you the character of these bulky machines. Now these machines are electrostatically sensitive, so they close and open and chemically operate, producing various ribosomes, various things which promote reactions and stuff like that. And so I don't know how much I'm going to get through on this. Your basic life has DNA, which always produces RNA, and RNA is the actual work craft. So DNA, if you'd like, is the computer program. RNA is the actual, the hardware. And the hardware produces more complex, sophisticated machines. So it's sort of like RNA is the worksman's toolbox, or person's toolbox. It goes across, and it's very tricky. The organism wants to produce more of itself, and the virus hijacks this, and the virus actually convinces that organism to produce some of it. So what it does is it sticks itself into the DNA. So the DNA itself either sticks as a little piece in there by itself. So if the DNA gets into the nucleus, it can be just switched on, or it can actually be incorporated inside. And so there's various things that go across. Now let's talk about bacteria. Bacteria basically have this sort of like a plastic pills. They're like that. Ether. Oh my god! I'm just going to see if I can find my way to park. Oh, I think there is a park around here. Hooray! That's great. I can talk. So I'm just doing this in about 10 minutes before Scouts end, so I'll be able to see how much I can get across. So your bacteria are the most basic life is the archaea. And this is basically loose cells, the nucleus, and it's all fluffy. They generally hate oxygen, archaic cells, and they hate oxygens. And then after that, you've got bacteria. One of the things that's archaea are so badly organized that viruses really, I suppose it could be a viruses of archaea, viruses really couldn't get going, didn't have the spread machinery pick it up. Or it could be that archaea is just actually a conglomerate of collective viruses. That's one view you could have of it. Now, bacteria are much smaller. They're sort of like archaea on steroids. They've worked out how to do it. They generally can thrive in oxygen, and they are the chloroplasts, the mitochondria. So we are actually bacteria enslavement. The rest of life is enslaved bacteria because it's such a good, efficient method of life. It's one of the things is it's really small, it's compact, it's efficient, it's hardy, it's rugged, it's got the outer surface, and it's got DNA inside it in terms of loops called plasmids. So your DNA basically repels each other. So if your DNA, if it was a spring around the place, and it sort of avoids each other, it's rather bulky. So to keep it under control, it gets forms in a ring. Now, the great thing about a ring is that you can just keep on zipping around it for infinitely quickly to produce more versions of it. It's the bacteria DNA is not broken up so much into chromosomes. It's basically plasmids. Can have, I suppose, different areas of it, but it can actually exchange its DNA sort of parallel. It doesn't mate, it goes parallel, so that two can go up and they can go and exchange information. It's sort of a pretty amazing thing to do. Now, what happens is that the DNA, so when a bacteria divides, it basically doesn't have any organelles of it, but it's got different chemicals which do certain things inside it. It's got bits of DNA and bits of machinery which puts together. It must have some ribose in there. And essentially when it wants to divide, it's got to have some mechanism to pull copies. It's got to double up everything inside it, move it to the side, and pinch itself off. That's simply how it reproduces. And so the viruses have devised a system called bacteriophages. These are machines, basically inert machines, which go around with sensitive legs, and the sensitive legs bind to the bacteria surface. So the bacteria surface has, it's not just pure plastic, it's got some surfaces, antibodies, or it's got things which enable it to be identified, even though it's incredibly small. So these bacteriophages go over to the surface. They've basically got an inanimate spring object, and they basically syringe their DNA into the bacteria. The bacteria is really small, and this gets the bacteria to make copies of the bacteriophage, and then the bacteria wall ruptures, and you get this. The viruses can beat bacteria. So these are pretty amazing objects. They show the surface of these bacteriophages with a complex surface of proteins, which are built in a hollow shell. They've got a delivery tube, a lance, and so it's got a lance. It's got to be able to lance through the wall of the bacteria without separating it. Bacteria is very interesting about how it can actually. None of these really small things can afford to eat because they don't have a coating of their inside, so they have to actually. So bacteria mostly excrete chemicals and basically digest from the outside coming along. So these bacteriophages have to be quite good at injecting their DNA into the bacteria, and the bacteria just not exploding for it. So DNA, the bacteria can rub. It's sort of relatively So the viruses are very sensitive to ultraviolet light. Then comes the bacteria. Then comes us. So we can actually walk around with a fair amount of ultraviolet light around the place. It's sort of a fairly interesting process. I'm just going to check what the time is here, so I'm not negligent of my kid. Okay, I've got a full 10 minutes to chat to him. This is through. So you've got your bacteria, which is this tiny little pill of juice. Basically, it's got no need for structure. Now your archaic cells have developed these actin filaments, these cytoskeletons. So your archaic cells can actually move around the place. So your single cell organisms can actually, if they want to, like amoeba, they can actually start to move around the place. Now, some of the most beautiful amoeba or archaic cells are the slime molds. These can actually land, and they're not colonies, and they're not individuals as we know them, in terms of that two of them can separate out, go different paths and meet up and reunite. They can eat up a food source, then at the end when the food is running out, unite together, shrivel up and turn into an array of spores. And in a sense, it could well be that the bacteria came from clever spores that basically are probably archaea spores, which that's my theory at least, that they're archaea spores that decided to skip the archaea range. They've got to come from somewhere. So that's my theory for bacteria. And so your bacteria, which is very ancient, has this ancient reservoir of viruses which attack the bacteria. A eukaryotic cell, which is funguses, plants, and animals, and a few prokaryotic. There's a few other ones which are close into it. They're sort of like the anally retentive archaea, in terms of that they've, rather than have their bacteria all about the place, they've decided that they're going to be like Marie Kondo, very organized, going various places, they're sort of like acquisitive, like an American thing. They've got all the appliances sitting around the cell, and it's all highly organized. And one of the things is that archaea, eukaryotic, is a viral nightmare, because if you're used to lobbing up to a bacteria, injecting yourself in, end of story, mate, let's move on. You do the same sort of thing to a eukaryotic cell. All you've done is that the actual DNA, which you've got to get to, is held in the center of the cell. And so eventually you have to work out a method of doing it. And so the incredible thing about it. So you've got viruses, which are lots of viruses, and they go in. So you've got two types of cells. You've got somatic cells, which are just like your dick, for instance. Well, no, well, that's probably the worst. Your piece of skin. This is cells which go, hooray, I'm alive, what's my job? I have to work until I die. Whereas your sperm cells are, hey, there's billions of us, but one in a billion, we're going to be absolutely, it's going to be your lucky day. It's sort of like the green card equivalent. So these are there, and they've got the DNA in the center ready for use. Now, the thing with this is that a lot of your ancient bacteria were basically nuclear bacteria. Your ancient viruses could only survive inside the nucleus. So the only way that they could survive is replicating through the generations. And so this is one of the crazy things, is that your placenta is a high. Well, firstly, there's the a lot of yourself is ancient bacterial cell, ancient viral cell. So, given that your cell is in the process of being hijacked, so essentially, at a point in evolution where, and this is the crazy thing, this is jawed animals. So, a jawless lungfish, a jawless hagfish, fish which don't have jaws, they're free. Sharks, which have virus, sharks have jaws. If it's got a jaw, it's in, even though it may not be related for some reason. So a crab doesn't have viruses, for instance. I don't know whether a virus can go and hit into an oyster. I'm not sure. I think it's bacteria and other types of things. But this strange thing is that you don't have a jawed animal which has a dead birth. So essentially, if you have to get your viral information across into the germline cell, the bacterial farting, so this virus stuffing around with the cell has been enough to actually mutate the cells enough so the placenta is born. And the placenta is a pretty amazing thing. So placenta is basically parasitical, is your placenta, which you had at one stage, one of the first things you grew, good investment, is a parasite. And so the viruses are your ultimate parasite, and the very ancient things, before the viruses worked out how to go in the free world and do all their acrobats, they were retroviruses, which we'll get into, but the retroviruses were also the viruses which tended to stay on the germline cells and migrate at germline. This is mother to baby, mother to baby. And one of the things that they did is that they would be able to move from one cell to the other by convincing the two cells to fuse, and then the two DNAs, the two nucleuses, put together. So you do have this bizarre thing in humans. You have most of the cells have a nucleuses. There are some cells in which they've said, we don't need the nucleus anymore. You're not going to reproduce. You're just going to do as you're told. And you're basically zombie cells, which is your red blood cells. So they don't have the nucleus. And we want you to go around. We want you to be light, all this type of thing. Nucleus is just too much of a hassle. You're too at risk to be hijacked later on. So there are some nucleus. However, there are some cells around the placenta which hijack the maternal cells and inject themselves, their nuclei, into maternal cells, and which means that's the end of the road for them. But this creates an immune barrier. So this is your ideal immune barrier. So your placenta, which is basically a parasite, the mothers are organized to get rid of parasites, and so this viral action is the virus is trying to control multicell organisms, wound up creating a pathway for live birth, maternal parasites invented, if you like, non-egg birth. It meant that the egg would, so after 14 days leaving the placenta, whether it's fertilized or not, the egg, your human egg, which has got a shell, the shell breaks and it goes, well, what the f-? And it says, well, look, I can bury myself in the placenta. And it has the correct cells to actually start to merge and make these Frankenstein cells, which have got two nucleuses, the mother and the baby's one, which sort of produces enough to convince the mother it's still the same, but enough for the baby to be the same. So it's sort of like it's the sort of UN convention cells. And that's your endoretrovirus. Now, incredibly, 10% of the human genome, which is, so if you got your genome, your DNA out in a line, of the ruler, it would stretch for 23 pieces. Well, what is it? Now, this is, there's, this is, it's sort of hard. It's, people explain this so poorly. Like, you've got to, when you're teaching this to a kid, you have to actually say, look, there's 22 duplicates, and an X and a Y, and the X and Y can either be an X and Y, which is not duplicated, or a duplicated X. So males have 24 chromosomes, females have 23. We have 24 with 23 and 24 not duplicated. I don't know how you say that. I don't know. This is the most poorly explained, confusing, stupid way of doing it. Of course, there's sort of plants which have three sexes, X, Y, Z, and the complexity goes on, or it's repeated, and it's not doubled up. It's got five copies. You know, how does that work? You know, and Mendeleev actually selected the most incredibly. Mendeleev was Grigor Mendel, who did the biology. He did certain studies which were statistically gifted. So my father did some research into this. So he did work for the NASA program on the statistics of it, and also forensic. You can actually do forensic statistics. That is, to look at some data and tell whether it has been manipulated. How about that? You can actually prove that some data numbers have been fudged, because you can change the average, but it's very hard to change the average in a statistically untraceable way. So there you go. And so Mendeleev was in the frame for how on earth did he get the results that he did get. Now it looks like my kids are coming out soon. Yeah, they are coming out. Sorry about this. We'll have to continue this lecture at a different date in future. Bye for now. Thanks for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.